culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc. You wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Supplication is the wealth of the believer and the bridge by which one achieves proximity to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the Exalted.
A path to salvation, a way to connect the two worlds. On the program, Bridge.
You are listening to the program Bridge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Al-Musavi.
A'udhu billahi min ash-shaytan ar-rajim. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Brothers and sisters, dear listeners, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to IRIB English Radio. And you are listening to the program Bridge. We are looking at supplication number 8 of As-Sahifat As-Sajjadiyya by Al-Imam Ali ibn al-Husayn Salamullahi alayhi Zainul Abidin. Verse number 1, vice number 2, and that is Al-Ghadab, anger. We're giving examples of bad anger because we said sometimes we might get angry for the wrong reasons. Before that, we said we need to get angry for the right reasons. As examples that we need to be aware of, that sometimes we might get angry for the wrong things. For example, we have what we call at-ta'assub lil-ashira, when a person gets angry when it comes to his family, to his tribe, to his clan, to his country, to his, I don't know, city. And then he gets angry for that sake, and he forgets about his Islamic, for example, teachings, his Islamic limitation, his Islamic morality and morals. So, for example, we see in a lot of countries these days who are still have tribes, or, you know, leaders of tribes. Take example, Iraq, for example, still pretty much a tribal country, even though it's a government. Sometimes when one member of the tribe does something wrong or kills someone, God forbid, you see the entire tribe stands behind him. And if the other tribes want to take retribution, or they're trying to take qisas, the other tribe, they get angry and then they start a war. And many of these tribal wars actually being caught on video. You can watch on YouTube. It's like a literal war, like two armies going towards each other with rockets and bullets and for hours on end. So you can see that anger, it's going way beyond, that leads to killing, that leads to bloodshed, because one says, well, you know, I need to support my own clan, my own tribe, my own this, my own that, my own country, and haq goes to waste. So one needs to be able to understand that when it comes to anger, that you should not do it when it comes to a matter of clan or what have you, if it is batil, right? So that is a problem that we have when we look at anger. Let us take a break, and then inshallah we continue right after.
A path to salvation, a way to connect the two worlds,
the bridge between Allah and His creation,
a bridge that is meant to take us to Allah, to
take us to His proximity, a bridge that is in the form of dua and supplication.
In this program, we offer commentary on the du'as of As-Sahifat As-Sajjadiyah of Imam Sajjad alayhi salatu wasalam.
The famous book of litanies, the Psalms of Islam.
Bridge.
Rabbana, Rabbana, Rabbana.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program Bridge. We're looking at bad examples of anger. Another example that we can relate to when it comes to anger, that sometimes you see people protesting about things they might find not suitable for their lifestyle or against the government or against laws or what have you, right? Every human being has the right to protest and make himself heard and raise his concerns. However, sometimes people get really angry in these rallies and these protests that they go the extra mile, to the extent that they start to break things, destroy things, burn things. Sometimes, for example, if there is police presence, these people get attacked and then turns into a confrontation. So it's no longer a peaceful protest. It becomes an angry, madness scene where people get hurt, blood gets shed, and so on and so forth. And recently, if you guys have been watching the news, for example, what you've seen in South Africa, for example, when they were trying to protest something, which was very stupid, because the prime minister or the previous minister was taken to prison for things that he did, all his supporters came to the streets, started burning and destroying things and property and shops of people. Now, is this anger necessary? Obviously not. Sometimes you can see it even when people go to soccer matches, and then you see riots within a soccer match, and so on and so forth. These are all examples of anger going out of control, anger that is not required, anger that causes a lot of destruction. From here we say a person needs to be intellectual, needs to keep his anger under control and own himself. Otherwise, we're going to have a problem on our hand if everybody decides to put his anger in the places that it shouldn't be. Let us take a break, then we continue right after.
Stay tuned to the IRIB English Radio.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program Bridge, coming to you from IRIB English Radio. Now, we were looking at certain bad examples of anger. Now, I would want to leave it with one more. Now, sometimes we have sectarian anger, right? And this is extremely dangerous, extremely, extremely dangerous, because sometimes it is fueled by external factors. For example, you guys all remember 2003 and above and after in Iraq, for example, where America got involved and they got in, and the Gulf countries got into on the line, and they fueled the sectarian war in Iraq, where they, for example, they blew up the dome of Imam al-Hassan al-Askari alayhi salam, and things just went haywire from there. For the Shia got provoked. They were very angry. They had a lot of anger to express. And in areas and cities where there were Shia and Sunni living together, then it became a massacre where people started killing each other. And we had all these fake checkpoints where they check your ID. If your name is Ali Hassan Hussein, you get killed. If your name is Omar Khalid, you get killed. And so on and so forth, which was not needed, not required. It's such anger is not in the right place. We have to understand who is our enemy and who is trying to fuel this fire that we have. So it doesn't matter what you believe in. You can believe in whatever you believe in. You can believe in whatever God, for all I care. That's what the Quran says. we need to make sure that we live in peace. Killing each other and being angry over our faith to the extent that we kill someone else, that is out of the picture in Islam. So when it comes to these examples and other examples that we live in, when it comes to anger, one really needs to control it. One really needs to put his intellect and his brain into play, not his emotions. Your anger should not be ruled and run by your emotions, rather your intellect. You have to train, maintain, tame, supervise your anger constantly before it becomes a problem and before it becomes a disease that will become very hard to treat and very hard to cure. We leave it here for today, and inshallah we'll see you in other episodes. Until then, take care of yourselves. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Al-Musawi in the program Bridge on IRIB English Radio.
هرگز نگیرد تا ابد آقا کسی جای تو را هرگز مخواد از کف دهم عشق و تولای تو را
The light.
A new study shows that moderate consumption of tea and coffee may be better for your health than previously thought. The study conducted by a Chinese medical university says tea and coffee can help keep stroke and dementia at bay. And if you're wondering what is meant by moderate consumption, it's defined as something between 2 and 5 cups of tea and coffee, either alone or combined in one day. The study followed more than 360,000 people aged 50 to 74 for over a decade. Some scientists have praised the study as robust. Others, however, say the participants were all selected from the UK Biobank, which means they're healthier than the general population. Pomegranate has a special place in Iranian culture. There is a trace of the fruit everywhere from poetry to cooking. Iranians even hold a pomegranate festival in the fall. This year the event is held in one of the main parks in the capital, Tehran. The festival features different varieties of pomegranates that are grown across Iran. The visitors can also find pomegranate products, including juices, concentrates, and dressings. The event includes cultural parades, music concerts, and traditional live performances. Iranians say they always welcome the pomegranate season, as it's one of the old symbols in the country's literature and art. The Christmas season always brings happiness and joy to people around the world. Many Parisians these days are taking a respite from the daily routines and hitting famous departmental stores now light up with present boxes. Cheerful families could be spotted at Christmas decorated galleries, Lafayette and Printemps department stores. Automated figures and colorful window displays are the center of attractions for them and their children. It's a season when people buy Christmas gifts for their loved ones, and stores make big profits this time around. Many Parisians say they want to take advantage of this period, as the government is debating whether or not to impose a COVID-related lockdown. In Venezuela, a large number of musicians are striving for one common goal, and that's setting the Guinness record as the world's largest orchestra. Over 12,000 musicians, mostly children and adolescents, have played together to make that happen. Hundreds of violins, violas, and double basses playing in unison at this setting in Caracas. The musicians are all connected to the country's network of youth orchestras. For them to set a record, over 8,000 instruments had to play at the same time during a 5-minute period of a classical piece. Right now, a Russian orchestra that played the country's national anthem is holding the record. Once done, the crowd of musicians erupted in cheers, lifting their instruments and waving Venezuelan flags. Guinness will announce its decision in the next 10 days. Tourists and residents in Los Angeles have been mesmerized by a dazzling new event the U.S. city is hosting, with holiday-themed and a full of colorful lights. Visitors can enjoy a mile-long walkway covered on all sides with brightly lit installations. Artists from around the world have taken part in the exhibition. The centerpiece display is a cathedral tunnel lit with thousands of bulbs. Another amazing attraction is the orbs, lit up with thousands of torches. The event has been a huge hit with the LA public.
Oh my gosh, it's so nice.
And it gets to be out in the open, and it's like a perfect night to do it, so it's great.
It's definitely the best. Like, we had to do, like, in a car to go see lights, and then we got to, like, now, like, go around and actually walk and get to see everything up close, which is super nice.
Yeah.
Definitely after the, year and a half that we've had.
Yeah.
So.
And it's really nice to see everything up close, because it's, like, you see in a photo, but then it's more real and real, so.
Yeah.
The event opened to the public on the 12th of November and will run for 5 nights. Preparations for the event, however, started a month ago. The organizers say millions of bulbs and 17 miles of cables are used for the 18 art installations.
Paleontologists in Brazil have discovered remains that could belong to a species of dinosaur as yet unknown. The fossils were found at a site in northeastern Brazil. A team of scientists is trying to put together the bones and complete the huge dinosaur's skeleton. They think it lived during the Cretaceous period, which began around 145 million years ago and ended with extinction of all dinosaurs roughly 66 million years ago. From a gray and gloomy look to a cheery and colorful appearance. That's a story of how a neighborhood in Peru's capital, Lima, is being transformed to become a tourist attraction. A group of artists in Lima are bringing color and joy to this hilly neighborhood by painting the walls of houses. Creating an optical illusion of a giant mural, the project is visible from different spots across the city. The designers are hoping what they did can improve the lives of residents in a neighborhood that was considered to be unsafe before.
What we are doing here is communal work with all the neighbors, and we are doing it because it's important to change the environment through the use of colors. This hill was considered an unsafe and dangerous area of the city, so we decided to change that social stigma through art, which, for me as a muralist, is the best tool to achieve it.
The project was started 5 months ago, and workers are now putting the final touches to their work of art. The mural covers over 300,000 square meters. It's the largest in South America.
The birth of a baby sloth at an uncharacteristically hasty speed has surprised London zookeepers. A tiny two-toed sloth, named Terry, was born to a mother, Marilyn, at the weekend. The zookeepers say there was no sign at all that Marilyn was going into labor when they checked her in the morning. However, less than an hour, they spotted something like a tiny arm tucked into her tummy. Marilyn had quietly delivered the baby with no fuss at all while her keepers were chopping up sweet potatoes for her breakfast. The mother and baby are said to be doing well, but the zookeepers still don't know the sex of the baby.
Modern technology has changed our lives in countless ways, with robots now preparing to lend a hand in operation rooms. Surgical robots are on display at the 4th China International Import Expo. One of the machines, dubbed Mesa X, gives assistance in spinal surgery. Employing the robot can lessen bleeding by 50% compared to open surgeries. Another one assists doctors to perform interventional surgeries.
Guide valves in the vessels can be controlled even less than 1 millimeter. Yeah. This is not cannot be achieved by the human hands. With the great, I think, market impact from this showcase, we successfully performed a first case PCI in Hainan Boao on March 13th.
The producers say surgical robots will soon operate in more hospitals around China. Therefore, training centers have been established to help surgeons learn how to operate the new generation of surgical robots.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
A tigress belonging to the endangered Bengal species has given birth to four cubs at the Mexican Zoo, bringing joy and hope to wildlife enthusiasts. The four were born in the San Jorge Park in the city of Ciudad Juarez on October 10th. Nearly a month on, they are in good health. That is good news, because usually when multiple cubs are born, not all of them survive. Zoo officials have not yet determined the sex of the newborn cubs. That is because their mother lets out a roar when the vets are nearby. Bengal tigers are endangered for two reasons: poaching and the destruction of their natural habitat. Here's what you can call killing two birds with one stone. Classic car lovers have gone on an exciting rally to see an erupting volcano. The event, organized by Beshbuk Rallies, happened on a Saturday. Motorists taking part in the vintage rally had the unique opportunity to witness a volcano erupting ash and smoke. Most of the participants tried to get as close as they could to the volcano, but there were also those who chose to take other vehicles because they were afraid that their precious antique cars would be damaged.
Workers digging gas pipes in the Peruvian capital Lima have discovered a cemetery dating back to millennia. Archaeologists have recovered six bodies, including those of children. All of them were buried in a seated position. The site also yielded about 40 burial vessels. The findings are thought to belong to the culture known as White on Red, which settled on the central coast of Peru centuries ago during the pre-Hispanic era.
Often it does not take much to bring about positive social change. In Johannesburg, a group of painters are creating artworks on the trolleys of street recyclers. Reason? To encourage bystanders to look up and notice the work recyclers, locally known as reclaimers, do in the community.
I like my work to have meaning, so when I get to paint and become a part of a project like this, it's great for me, you know, because it's not every day we get to like do stuff like this. So, yeah.
Up until now, they were just filthy-looking jumbo bags with recyclable waste wheeling along the streets. But thanks to graffiti artists who are giving them a makeover with bold and bright designs to help identify and protect the recyclers, artists say their goal is to build a relationship between neighborhood residents and waste pickers. The reclaimers roam around the city day and night, with some motorists even considering them a risk as the trolleys are not always visible. There are some 6,000 reclaimers in Johannesburg who make a living collecting, sorting, recycling garbage. It's a messy job, but they do it anyway. A group of women are joining hands to protect one of India's key natural sites that is also on UNESCO's heritage list, the Western Ghats, a mountain chain that's facing severe deforestation. The 27 members of this all-female task force are doing all they can to protect the area's rare ferns, mosses, and thousands of other plants. They're using a variety of gardening tools and techniques to preserve species from all over the mountains. Not only that, but they also make artificial conditions and habitats for endangered species from other parts of the world, mainly those affected by climate change. One of the conservationists explained that what they are doing is actually helping the forest regenerate.
We have witnessed the birth of a forest, and that's a very powerful thing. You know, the mind is filled with the ghastly stories of forests being cut, like the Amazon or like the Western Ghats, but here we're witness to the birth of forests as well, and that is the forest itself birthing itself, you see.
The Western Ghats Mountains are home to nearly 5,000 species of flowering plants, but many of them are globally threatened. Only less than half of the area's flora is currently under conservation. Scientists say the outlook for the mountain is very concerning. Carbon dioxide is one of the causes of global warming, but can we get rid of it to save our planet? A Swiss firm has come up with a novel idea to store CO2 underground and turn it into rocks. Company Climeworks has started operating the world's largest direct air carbon capture and storage plant called Okra in Iceland. Located in Hershady, Okra is entirely run on renewable energy. It soaks carbon dioxide directly from the air and buries it as rocks deep underground to be mineralized. Usually, a natural process takes hundreds of thousands of years to turn the gas into basaltic rocks. But here, it takes up to 2 years for the CO2 to turn into white crystals.
Once the carbon dioxide is captured, it will be dissolved in water, and here we are at the injection site. The carbon dioxide dissolved in water will come through this pipe into the well, where it will be injected into the volcanic rock at a depth of between 800 meters and 2 kilometers.
The plant is said to be removing 4,000 tons of carbon dioxide from the atmosphere each year. The amount is too little to save the planet from carbon emissions, as climate modeling suggests the world needs to eliminate several billion tons per year by 2050. Here we have to take into account the saying of the head of Orca that we have to learn to walk before we can run.
قاموس الرجال starts with an introduction, and in this introduction there are 28 chapters in which different ideas that late Allama Tustari had in Ilm al-Rijal are mentioned in this introduction.
Allama Shushtari, since he was really interested in this field of study, when he was reading the book Tanqih al-Maqal, he had his specific comments on the views of Allama Ma Maqani, the author of the book and Tanqih al-Maqal.
Be more familiar with outstanding Shia figures in The Teacher.
Ya Mu'allim, peace be upon you, truly you are our teacher.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is The Teacher. I'm Atta, the host of this program. The Teacher is about the life and works of the most outstanding Muslim thinkers, philosophers, and scholars all across the world of Islam. With me in the studio are two guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Sheikh Mahtavi and Sheikh Ziyaniya. Sheikh Mahtavi, assalamu alaikum, welcome to the show.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah.
And Sheikh Ziyaniya, assalamu alaikum, brother.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah to you and to your dear listeners.
As we said in our previous program, Allama Muhammad Taghi Shushtari is famous for writing a book in the field of Rijal, or we can say the narrators of Ahadith, and that book is Qamus al-Rijal. Let's first talk a little bit about the term itself. I mean, al-Rijal, we explained about it in our previous discussion. But what about Qamus? What does it mean? When you say Qamus al-Rijal, what do you mean exactly?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. The word Qamus literally means the ocean, mm-hmm, or the sea. And when we have a joint expression, Qamus al-Rijal, and we know the meaning of Rijal, meaning the man.
Yes.
But here, what is meant by Rijal means the narrators, yes, of ahadith and traditions.
It does not mean men or something.
Yes, yeah, definitely. Okay. It is not talking about the lay people during, yes, the history.
Yes.
It's talking about the narrators, mm-hmm, of the ahadith and traditions of Ahlul Bayt. When we have this combined expression, actually it is possible to say it's kind of encyclopedia, mm-hmm, talking about the biographies of narrators, great narrators, of companions of Ahlul Bayt who transmitted the words and saying,
right,
of our imams.
Mm-hmm.
So what is the content of this book?
Yes.
I think before we talk about Qamus al-Rijal and before we get our audience know about Qamus al-Rijal, it's good to tell them it's a kind of commentary of the book Tanqih al-Maqal.
Okay, which is related to...
Yes, Tanqih al-Maqal is a very famous book,
mm-hmm,
in terms of science of narrators, or Ilm al-Rijal.
Another Ilm al-Rijal, okay?
Yes.
Yes.
So as the author of the book Qamus al-Rijal, late Sheikh Muhammad Taghi Shushtari mentions, he actually has listed,
mm-hmm,
the name of all companions and all narrators of ahadith based on the alphabet.
Sorry, before that, Tanqih al-Maqal is compiled by whom?
Ma Maqani.
Abdullah Ma Maqani.
Yes, Allama Ma Maqani. Yes,
Allama al-Ma'u. Okay.
Yes, and
in the Arabic language. Okay.
Yes, actually, right, he could be considered temporary with,
yes,
Sheikh Muhammad Taghi Shushtari. Sure. That is not a very old book.
Oh, being, old, yes, generation. Okay, yes, that's right.
So Allama Shushtari, since he was really interested in this field of study, when he was reading the book Tanqih al-Maqal, he had his specific comments on the views of Allama Ma Maqani, the author of the book and Tanqih al-Maqal.
That's right.
And he had one very, as we can say it, turning point meeting with Agha Buzurg Tehrani, who is considered as one of the contemporary catalogists, and he recommended and suggested this is good idea to compile all your comments, mm-hmm, on Tanqih al-Maqal in one book.
Okay.
And that's why he started to collect all the comments,
mm-hmm,
and later on we can speak about the way of his collection and the way he put his comments in order, as I mentioned,
that's right,
he listed the narrators of Ahadith based on the Arabic alphabets.
Yes.
And when he mentions the name of one narrator, first of all, he brings the view of Allama Mamaqani. And besides the view of Allama Mamaqani, he sometimes collects the views of other scholars with respect to if there's any additional points with respect to that specific narrator. And he specifies his view with the term aqulo, meaning saying, I say.
That's right.
So,
or this is my view.
Yes, this is my view, okay, based on my opinion. So it's a very valuable work for our audiences if they want to have a kind of encyclopedic study on the narrators of Ahadith. Why? Because they can have a kind of comparative study on different views of different ulamas on the narrators of Ahadith. This is not to say, okay, I'm going to read it and believe in whatever the author of the book is going to say. No, the author of the book has enabled you to come to this point that you can judge.
That's right.
Why? Because I have listed the views, the views of the other ulama, and by the end of every narrator, actually biography, I will say my view under the title of Aqulu.
Aqulu. That's all right. Okay, Sheikh Ziaynia, do you have any information about the main content of the book? I mean, how many sections does it have, or where does he start from with reviewing Allama Mamaqani's methodology and then presenting himself? I mean, Allama Shushtari.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Qamus al-Rijal starts with an introduction. And in this introduction, there are 28 chapters in which different subjects, like, you know, some, you know, points regarding the book Tanqih al-Maqal, and some, you know, basic, you know, ideas that late Allama Tustari had in Ilm al-Rijal are mentioned in this introduction. After that, he goes to the names of the Rijal and narrators of Hadith, and he mentions 8,567 Ruvat here. And
Ruvat is the plural form of Ravi?
Yes.
Okay.
And it's obvious that this part is the main part of the book.
That's right.
Then he goes to the part of kunya and gives the kunya of, you know, Ruvat. That kunya in English, we may call it title. But again, he has the subject of Alqab, the chapter of Alqab.
Okay.
And again, in English, we may call both kunya and Alqab as title. We don't have a good word in English for kunya.
Is it for? Is it related to the Ruvat? I mean, to the
Ravian?
Yes,
yes, yes.
For example, something like a pseudonym or nickname or something like that? Is
maybe.
It
so? For example, a person, his name is Hassan, and his father is Ahmad.
Okay.
And he has a son, for example, that his name is Ali.
Uh-huh.
They may call him Abu Ali. And this Abu Ali is a kunya for him.
Yes, okay.
And then he moves to the part of female robot. And he says, he talks about the females that are narrators of Hadith. And in this part, he collects 521 narrators.
That's all right.
And at the end, he gives an ending part for the book in which he gives 33 chapters in different issues regarding Ilm al-Rijal.
That's all right.
Although this book is very beneficial, but there are some points regarding it. For example, when Allama Tustari is talking about figures and people and is giving some resources, he is not mentioning the page and the volume of the books. So you will be in trouble if you want to refer to the resources.
Okay.
And sometimes he uses some quotes to refer to the resources. For example, he wants to mention, for example, Rijal Shaykh al-Tusi. For example, he uses re. And it makes you sometimes...
Is it in abjad form, for example, or something like that?
It's a code.
It's a code,
you know,
one,
he wants to use, you know, some abbreviations.
Abbreviations or codes in order to refer to the sources or names, okay.
So if a person is not familiar with the, you know, manner of the book, he will be in trouble to study at the beginning.
In modern world of study, when they want to compile a book, some parts are in the code form. There will be a list of the symbol and the variants and the codes at the very beginning of the book. Yeah. That, for example, this term or this code might refer to this incident or event or this person. Maybe this is something should be done with Allahumma
ma'alif. Of course it had been done. Of course it had been done by him. But the person who, you know, you are not able every time to refer at the beginning of the book. So it makes some confusion for some, you know, beginner readers.
Some might ask, what is the significance of rajah? For example, if we want to refer to the saying of an infallible imam or Prophet Muhammad, is it necessary for a Muslim as a common user in order to refer to a Rajali book to find it whether it is authentic or not to use from the sentences of the infallible imams? I mean, is it at all usable in the practical life of the people as a Muslim?
Actually, this is something that must be done. But you might be asking that how is that possible for people who have no knowledge or they don't know if there is any easy access to get to know about the authenticity of the narrators. I think this is the question that we have to talk about because that is obvious. Everybody, if we say that you are quoted, that you have said blah, blah. So you have this right to object, saying that, okay, why you didn't ask about those people who have quoted me? So those people do not have a good reputation. So even just knowing this point that that person who is quoting or narrating something from me will give you this view that you shouldn't rely on his saying. The same goes with the sayings of Ahlul Bayt and the prophets. We might be seeing some people even scholars who are quoting Ahlul Bayt from the ahadith, and sometimes they are referring us to some of the books, saying that in book 8 this is referred or this is quoted from Imam Sadiq that he has said this in regard to that, for example, subject. So this is very important for the audience because right now we have a really easy access. If at least we know Arabic language, we can have an easy access in order to verify the authenticity of the narrator of that specific saying through the websites. Yeah, I think this is something that we have to talk about it. For our audiences, they cannot rely specifically if the content of the saying looks problematic to us. I think one of the good things to make sure whether or not this saying is genuine or fabricated, at least we have to give this possibility that even though I cannot refer and verify that, I can go to the scholar and ask about the chain of narrators. Yeah, this is something that everybody must make sure about before they rely on the content.
That's all right. Any comment on Rajal?
Of course, just referring to the Ruwat and, you know, narrators of hadith and to find out whether they are authentic or not is not the only way to know that this hadith is correct or not. Let me give you a story from one of the students of Allama Tabatabai rahmatullah alayh. You know, he is saying that we were studying Biharul Anwar with the late Allama, and he was teaching us, he was elaborating, explaining riwayat for us. And he says that when we were studying previously, before going to the class, we were studying the book and riwayat to get ready for the class. And when we studied some of riwayat, we were sure that this riwayat is fabricated because it's, you know, issue and subject and, you know, concept is a, in a way that our mind is not accepting it. And when we participated at the course of Allama and listened to his words, when we were getting out of the class, we had come to this point that this riwayat, if is not, you know, said by Imam, for sure it's having good, you know, concepts. So, you know, getting concepts and subjects from riwayat needs, you know, some expertise. And it's not the...
You mean extracting messages from the riwayat. That's right.
Or deriving out messages from this riwayat is not easy for, you know, a single person, you know, a person who is just, for example, have some studies regarding hadith, then he says, okay, I'm the one who may derive out, you know, messages from riwayat. This is not the way. And that's why I said I do not suggest Qamus al-Rijal for ordinary people.
For ordinary people, that's right.
It's, you know, an academic book.
That's all right. Okay, but still the people, if they face any type of hadith or narration, at least they can Google it on the website, who is the main author or who is the main teller of this narration or hadith, or is it at all authentic or not. This could be a nice one for the Muslims, especially the Shiite community.
To get general knowledge.
The general knowledge on their lives. That's all right. Thank you very much, Sheikh Mahdavi and Sheikh Ziyainia, for your nice elaboration regarding the book Qamus al-Rijal, compiled by Allama Muhammad Taghi Shushtari. May Allah bless him and bless all the scholars who dedicate their life for spreading the knowledge of Islam and the Shiite Islam all across the world. It was very kind of you. And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to us. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/Ian Call of Islam page. Also, a YouTube channel and Instagram page, Call of Islam Radio. Till another episode of the program, Teacher and Introducing Another Great Personality and Dignitary. God bless you all. Fi amanillah.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/EN.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked.
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example.
Self purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech.
the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, welcome to another episode of Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by the late Ayatollah Agha Mujtaba Tahrani.
حالا بیایم این روایت رو از امام صادق علیه السلام دارد غرفی بعض الکتب
امام جعفر الصادق علیه السلام in a beautiful tradition answers those people who have hope in other than Allah. He states, do you have hope in other than Allah? That is, Allah will do something so that you won't trust anyone other than Allah.
من اینجا چیکار میکنم؟ یه کاری میکنم که قطع امید دل بشه.
Do you understand? This is the mercy and blessing of Allah. Allah does not do this to show his power to his servants. No, this is his generosity. Whatever door you knock upon, I will close it for you. I will wear you out. I will do this to you many times because I know in your heart you believe in me. I want to do something so that you reject all others and only think of me. Then you will see how I remove all the obstacles on your way. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Ulama's Speech, where we listen to a speech by Ayatollah Agha Mujtaba Tahrani. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. Until another episode, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
It's the show where we discuss the most topical of topics, the most controversial of controversies, and the most important affairs of affairs.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Salaamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Dear listeners, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon you all. You are listening to IRIB English Radio. And this is Back to Reality. We are glad to have you all on the show. Over here, we discuss about different but interesting topics, which we can relate to our daily life. And I'm your host, Hassanain, and today we have got two special guests with us. Salaamu alaikum, Brother Sayyid Mohsen.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thanks for inviting.
Welcome to the show. And can you please tell our audience where you're from and what's your field of study?
I'm from Pakistan. I'm currently pursuing my PhD in Islamic economics from the Hawza Ilmiya Qom.
MashaAllah. And we also have Brother Sayyid Abdullah with us. Salaamu alaikum, brother.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And thank you for having me.
We're glad to have you here. And can you please tell our audience where you're from and what's your field of study?
I am from Iraq, currently residing in Australia. My field of study is Quran and Hadith.
MashaAllah. Dear listen, so without any further delay, let's start with our main discussion. And the topic for today is it necessary to learn about different religion? So brothers, in today's world, we are having a lot of different religions, like different people following different religions. And the interesting part is all of them claim to be the righteous one. In this scenario, do you have to learn about different religions to know about our own religion and to know that if our religion is the right one?
When we talk about the religion, it is necessary to first learn about your own religion, because if you are not aware of your own religion, then it is very easy for someone else to take you away or to attract you towards his own religion.
Own religion, do you mean the religion
whichever religion they follow? Obviously he was grown up in a society. Yeah. Maybe he's a Christian, he's a Muslim, he's a Hindu. So the basic, logically, when we talk about this issue, it is necessary to know about your own religion first, especially if you're a Muslim, and try to learn, read some theological books, the proofs why you are a Muslim, why there is only one God, and there is no other than Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, why we are monotheist. So first of all, we need to learn about our own religion. Later, I don't say it is necessary to learn about different religions, but later if you have any dialogues, it is better to refer to someone who knows about it. Mm-hmm. You know, because we haven't learned many things. Still, we can see in the Muslim community, people even don't know what does Quran says, where the Quran is the book of guidance.
Yeah.
People haven't even read the translation, a simple translation of the whole Holy Quran. So when they do not know about their own religion, it's an obligation on them, basically. That's what I would like to say, mm-hmm. that to learn about your religion first, what are the reasons that you're Muslim, why you follow such a religion, what are the proofs, so that tomorrow if someone basically asks you a question or maybe brings an argument, you should be able to answer that. And generally, the process of learning other religions starts from where we get involved into different dialogues practically. Yeah. Or maybe we are searching about something, we have a doubt in our minds about a topic, maybe a subject, and then we go further and read the other religions or maybe a specific part of that religion.
Let's stop here. Inshallah, we continue after a short break.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Back to Reality.
Welcome back, dear listeners, and we're discussing about if it's necessary to learn about different religions.
With us, we have what we call Usuluddin and Furu'uddin, right?
Yeah.
Branches and the roots of religion. When it comes to Usuluddin, the branches and the pillars of faith that we have, we say there is no taqlid in that. There is no imitation, there is no following.
Yeah.
So you need to find out Allah for yourself. Mm-hmm. You need to understand who Allah is, who the Prophet is, imams, and so on and so forth. So there's a kind of emphasis in Islam that you need to study for yourself when it comes to the matters of belief, first and foremost.
Yeah.
And when you want to know Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, obviously you have to ask yourself, mm-hmm. am I the right one?
Yeah.
Am I on the right track? Is Islam the right religion to begin with?
Yeah.
So if you're blessed to be in a Muslim family, mm-hmm. well, obviously you got a head start.
Yeah.
But now you have to ask yourself, what makes my God the correct right God and not the other gods? Why not Jesus Christ? Why not Buddha? Why not, you know, whatever they want to call them?
Yes.
So why not them? So at least you do have a bit of requirements to do a bit of search and to try to study as well. We're not saying, well, study them for the sake of trying to see if they are true, but at least get to know what they're talking about. And then you make that comparison with yourself and find the right one. Because Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, one thing He does not take lightly, and that's a blind following.
Yeah.
Every time in the Quran when He says, why did you do this? قَالُوا وَجَدْنَا أَبَاءُنَا. We found our parents, and then we're just going to follow. So me as a Muslim, if Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala puts me to the stand and